This week on Making Contact.
We need to meet and we need to prepare for this because we may have to go to jail for it. People thought I was joking. They were laughing. And then I said, no, I'm serious.
Along the east bank of the Mississippi River, just outside of New Orleans in St. Bernard Parish, lies the community of Versailles, home to a largely unknown but deeply rooted Vietnamese-American community. After Katrina, the area was virtually washed out. But now, nearly 2 years later, it's a community on the mend. On this edition, correspondent Nock Nguyen takes us to Versailles. As the community struggles to rebuild, they face yet another threat to their homes, history, and way of life. I'm Tina Rubio, and this is Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information.
Cái xả đá đi con, à cái nách à, tao thôi đây không khỏi xả nữa, tao tưởng.
71-year-old Ma Thị Nguyen is in her kitchen giving advice to her daughter-in-law about how to prepare meat and vegetables for the day's meals. The recipes may be handed down through the generations, but the Nguyen family's kitchen is brand new. There's a fresh coat of pastel-colored paint on the walls, and the linoleum floor is gleaming white.
It took a year to rebuild the home. We just moved in a couple months ago. It wasn't easy. It was hard to buy materials. You had to order the materials and hire laborers to help you. And there were not enough laborers either.
As Hurricane Katrina made landfall, Nguyen fled with family members to Dallas, where she stayed for 3 months. But she gradually made her way back to New Orleans East. Now she's living with her son and his family in the predominantly Catholic Vietnamese-American enclave known as Versailles. The neighborhood is named after the Versailles Arms, public housing projects where many Vietnamese new to the U.S. were resettled after they fled their country in 1975. Nguyen was determined to return.
Ở đâu cũng không, chúng tôi già tuổi già rồi, thế ở đâu cũng không bằng ở chỗ này.
We're old now, and no place compares to living here. First, there's a lot of Vietnamese here, with their houses right next to each other. You can go to church every day. There are Vietnamese markets where you can buy or sell goods. And if your children don't take you to town, you can get a ride from the neighbors.
Before Katrina, about 25,000 Vietnamese Americans lived in Louisiana, about half of them in New Orleans East. The Catholic Church estimates that 85% of Versailles residents have come back, while return rates in other neighborhoods are much lower. Overall, New Orleans is down to about half its pre-Katrina numbers. 53-year-old Nguyen Tha was one of the first Versailles residents to return. He said he got a phone call from a church leader asking him to come back to help rebuild. His hard work helped pave the way for other members of the community, like the elderly Ma Thị Nguyen, to come back.
The church organized about 20 youth volunteers who came to the community. Together, the first thing we had to do was go into all the homes and throw away the refrigerators. By that time, they began to reek with the odor of rotting food. We hauled them to the street curb so the city could come and cart them away. That was backbreaking and dirty work that we were willing to do. We also helped collect and distribute clean drinking water and cleaning supplies. The water was used to cook and drink, bathe, and clean the house. So when people came back, they had what they needed, and it sped up the community's return.
During that time, the Mary Queen of Vietnam Church served as an organizing hub. Community members from Baton Rouge and Houston stayed there on the weekends while their homes were being gutted. Relief volunteers from across the country stayed there as well. Christina Wadwani was one of them. A student at George Washington University in Washington, D.C., she's one of dozens of bright young Vietnamese Americans who came to the Gulf States to help out.
Before Katrina, there was no knowledge that there was such a huge Vietnamese American community here, or Vietnamese community in New Orleans East. I never knew until I was looking to do some humanitarian work here. And then once you find that, it's just like bees to honey, or honey, you know, we are attracted to it. It's like a magnet. And young Vietnamese Americans like myself who want to get our hands dirty, want to be involved in the community, we just keep coming back.
In the months following Hurricane Katrina, the community struggled to return. Residents like Nguyen Tha cleaned and gutted homes, priest at Mary Queen of Vietnam Church resumed Mass, drawing larger and larger crowds. Community members even pushed the city to turn on the water and power in their area, where many residents had returned. Nguyen Tha recalled that 3 months after Hurricane Katrina, the city finally flipped the switch on. But as Versailles residents struggled to return and rebuild their community, the city had other ideas. The initial plan was to demolish whole neighborhoods in New Orleans East and make way for either an airport or a green space. 25-year-old Mary Chen, who grew up in Versailles, moved back to the community in November 2005. But she said news about the proposed plan initially discouraged her family from returning.
My dad, I would talk to my dad probably almost every other day. You know, he would ask the conditions of the community or people returning. And then, you know, because he would hear stuff like, oh, they're going to demolish our community to build an airport. And then by me working here and then doing all the short plans and seeing that the community is putting so much work into trying to rebuild it, I told my dad that, no, we're going to return. You know, like, people are going to come back. They're not going to demolish us. Don't worry. You know, just come back.
Like many other Versailles residents, she was determined to return to her hometown. It was a relatively easy choice. This was not the first time this community of Americans had their lives uprooted. As political refugees following the communist takeover of South Vietnam in 1975, many Vietnamese Americans were introduced to this country through a resettlement project that scattered them in cities and towns across the United States. In 1976, the Archdiocese of New Orleans encouraged the Vietnamese Catholics from South Vietnam to come and live in the Crescent City. Many following this religion-based call made their way to the city, but others like Nguyen Tha were drawn there by the news that a Vietnamese community was growing in New Orleans.
Khi bắt đầu mình sang Mỹ thì một người em ruột mình đi trước, người em trai kế mình đi.
My younger brother had arrived earlier and lived in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. He sponsored the rest of the family to the United States. I had a few other relatives in New Orleans, including an uncle who came to the U.S. in 1975. During a vacation to the area to visit my uncle, my parents liked the community, where there were lots of other Vietnamese, which was nice for them as they were getting older. So we moved here in 1983.
What Nguyen Tha found in Versailles was a tight-knit community united not only by shared faith, but also a shared history. Father Luke Nguyen Hung Dung has served as pastor at the Mary Queen of Vietnam Church for 2 years, and he's gradually come to learn the story of the community.
The people here are made up of three parts. They came from three parts from the north, and they migrated to the south into the places there. And the people who are make up of this, the makeup of this community, are the people who are from those three places of the south and the north.
The generational bonds in the community reach back to three villages in North Vietnam. In 1954, the villagers trekked to South Vietnam, along with about 1 million other Catholics, and resettled near each other in Saigon, and then, eventually, in America. Once in the U.S., many villagers migrated again. Often they ended up living within a mile of each other, forming a close community where generational bonds form the basis of daily life. With such strong historical and communal ties, it's easy to feel like an outsider in Versailles. Just ask 21-year-old Susan Do. Her parents met and married in Louisiana, and despite being born and raised in New Orleans, Do said she still feels like she doesn't quite belong in Versailles.
Coming from the West Bank, I was very involved in my community over there, and having the Pastoral Council over there, they loved the work that we did over there, and the fact that I was so involved, and they knew, they were very comfortable with me. That's what it was. And so when I came into this community, I was like very aloof. I didn't know what to say to certain elders because I didn't know them and they didn't know me. To them, I was an outsider. And so I felt really insecure in that sense. I didn't talk much. But it's so different when I'm in my own community. I'm just, you know, have an opinion about everything.
21-year-old Nguyen Thanh Minh says his earliest memories include life at the original landing spot for many in the community, the Versailles Arms public housing.
That's a playground area that my grandparents used to take me to, just to, like, you know, play or whatnot. During Fate was like the biggest deal because they always like dragon dance dancers, like they walk the whole community, and you know, Mulan, you know, dance for like the whole community. So it was a really incredible experience because it was just, there's a big community in a public housing area, right?
Back then, Ming's family struggled to make a living. His father worked as a fisherman and his mother worked in supermarkets, and the family received government assistance. Over time, like many Vietnamese American families in the area, they were able to save enough money to move out of public housing and buy their own home. For many like Ming, the roots of the community still lie in the memories of the early years at the Versailles Arms and their first church. Father Vien Nguyen of Mary Queen of Vietnam Church.
This was our original church. And then, of course, we outgrew it. So we kept it as the, of course, for the sake of history and the all of the investment into it, personal sweat and everything else. So pre-Katrina, we were still using this as our day chapel. We had morning masses here. And then that's also for the people who the older people who were still living in the subsidized housing area, so that they can attend church, because they don't have transportation, so they walk to church. That's what we were providing.
We'll have more in a few moments. You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information, or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. That's 800-529-5736. You can also download programs or get our podcast at radioproject.org. The community's attachment to the land on which they farmed, built their churches and homes, and buried their ancestors drew them back to Versailles. But as locals began to rebuild their homes and community after Katrina, they found that the city had established a new landfill less than 2 miles from the community, a new neighbor that the Versailles residents viewed as a threat to both their land and community. Again, Father Luke.
We came back here in October, and we already cleaned up our mess, cleaned up everything already. We already clean up and we move on with our development. And here, and right away, the landfill put in our community, which going to obstruct the returning of the people. So what are we going to do? We're going to voice our voice back. We are the people don't want that landfill. Hey, if that landfill is going to be put there, hey, ask us, is it okay to put there? But the people, we kind of being ignored.
It's no secret, Hurricane Katrina left an environmental mess in its wake. High winds and flooding brought destruction and disease. It also caused a waste disposal nightmare as mountains of debris piled up in the streets and yards of what were once established neighborhoods. Last April, New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin bypassed standard zoning rules and ordered the start of dumping at a landfill near Chef Mentor Highway. The new landfill is near two other waste dump sites, all located in New Orleans East, with its largely African-American and Vietnamese-American community. The newest landfill, expected to take in debris from 150,000 homes, filling up 100 acres and reaching 85 feet high, faced immediate community opposition. Community members demanded the city install a liner to prevent toxins from leaching into the groundwater. They said it threatened two main bodies of water nearby, the Bayou Sauvage Wildlife Refuge, the largest urban wildlife preserve in the nation, and the Maxent Canal. Church leaders said it threatened the health of residents. Locals fished in the waterways and drew water to irrigate fruits and vegetables in their gardens. As with most things political in New Orleans, the landfill issue has a history. In the 90s, the Versailles community successfully fought two previous attempts to dump at the Chef Mentor site. This time, they have joined forces with their African-American neighbors to take on the city. Together, the group has mobilized hundreds of community members to protest in front of City Hall, with Father Vian emerging as an outspoken critic and a community leader.
We need to meet and we need to prepare for this because we may have to go to jail for it. People thought I was joking. They were laughing. And then I said, no, I'm serious. And then some of my younger people knew that I was serious. And so we prepared for it. We had meetings and we brought in people from the outside to help train us, prepare us for it. We've never demonstrated with the intention and willingness to go to jail. This time we did, because we felt that was what was required.
And the protests were also successful in bringing together generations. Grandmothers stood alongside students in front of City Hall. 71-year-old Mo Thị Nguyen was one of the protesters.
We willingly went to protest the landfill. We all have citizenship and weren't afraid and willingly went out and stood on the front lines. We didn't do anything to get arrested by the police, but if they did arrest us, we would have gone peacefully. If the church asks us, we would willingly go to protest and to City Hall.
Ming began organizing youth around the landfill issue. He invited experts to talk about the environmental impacts of the landfill and then organized community forums where the young people shared what they learned with other community members. Ming said this was the first time that Versailles youth had a voice in the community.
I mean, if the youth want to do something, it's always been shut down by the elderlies. So my response after the meeting, when they were asking, you know, how come the youth are not involved, you know, my response was because you never gave the community never gave youth a voice.
Ming helped found the Vietnamese American Young Leaders Association of New Orleans to give the younger generation a voice and role in the community. And during the battle against the landfill, Ming said the generations found they needed each other. Young people used their English language skills and understanding of how to navigate the system, while the older generation contributed their time and numbers. Faith-based organizing was effective in the Versailles community, but 25-year-old Mary Chan, head of the Mary Queen of Vietnam Community Development Corporation, says the strategy has its drawbacks, too.
If Father Vin says something, it's kind of like everyone agrees with it, and then when one person doesn't agree with it, they're not going to say it, you know? So it's kind of, I think that's the only drawback. I mean, no one is, most people aren't strong enough to go up to Father Vian and tell them, oh no, I like it this other way, or let's do it this other way.
The protest drew enough national attention to the landfill that Mayor Nagin shut it down in August 2006 and canceled the city's contract with Waste Management, Inc. The community also successfully halted the city's proposal to develop New Orleans East into a so-called green space. The Ring New Orleans Back Commission convened key community stakeholders, including city planners, community and religious leaders, and the private sector. But without consulting New Orleans East community members, the group proposed constructing a green space, a move that would have displaced thousands of residents. In addition, community members saw it as an attempt to create an environmental buffer for the downtown business district. After Katrina, Father Vian said community members realized they could no longer remain isolated or passive. To protect their community interest, they had to be at the bargaining table.
They looked up, and then I represented the community, and I told them that you making decisions about us without consulting us have the right to be at the table. You can't do what you are doing. And I saw them backpedaling. And you know, and then they hee-hawed, and finally they agreed that it wasn't done.
Now that the community had come together to oppose what it didn't want to see in the community, they now had to envision what they did want. Father Vian says it was like starting with a clean slate.
You see, pre-Katrina, we arrived in this country. Everything was set in terms of, say, the houses, how they were built, where they were. Everything was set, so we bought what was already existing. Actually, our people's gardens are very reflective of what we were doing. in the sense that our people, in terms of creating fences around their gardens, they pick up whatever they could find. And so it was very haphazard. Even in terms of the business nodes that were being built, they were built according to people's pockets, the availability of money. So there was no sense of beauty or ease of use. People did whatever they wanted. And so we built as we move along. And in many ways, we were tied down. We were stuck to that pattern. Katrina came and gave us the opportunity to begin anew.
Taking control of their own community rebuilding, Versailles residents founded the Mary Queen of Vietnam Community Development Corporation. During last year's Tet holidays, the Community Development Corporation invited volunteer designers, urban planners, and architects to work with locals and draw up their own plans for the neighborhood's rebuilding. The Community Development Corporation's Mary Jen.
We had the focus groups before the charrette. So then we had one focus group for seniors, one for youth, and one for business owners. And then so they kind of told us what they wanted to see. And then we kind of researched on the computer, on the internet, to find pictures of like the different kind of businesses and how the facade improvements. So then we printed out the pictures, and then we would post it on a poster, and then we would ask them if they like this or if they don't. And then we kind of circled what they did and noted what they didn't. So then we knew what to tell the professionals, like how to draw and what the community wanted and didn't want.
The corporation took its name from the parish. It's independent from the church, but several church leaders are major players in it. Father Vian is one of them.
See that levee? That's the levee that you saw yesterday. So all of this area...
As he drives around the neighborhood, Father Vian says they're currently working on plans to develop a senior retirement community, a charter school, and a community garden.
This 20-acre piece of land, that's right next to the church, right behind the that one row of houses here. All of these are on the left-hand side are Vietnamese-owned, American-owned. And we want to buy this, get this piece of property to build a community garden. The owner wanted too much. He wanted $35,000 an acre, which, you know, for my people here, that even at $10,000, they said I shouldn't buy it. But still, I was willing to pay $20,000 per acre. But so he put it on sale. No one bought it yet. I think his list price is $1.1 million. We're willing to pay $500.
Before Katrina, the Vietnamese American seniors spent much of their time tending unofficial community gardens on unused land along the banks of the Maxent Canal. They grew squash vines, banana trees, and traditional herbs and spices like lemongrass. The proposed community garden would bring that tradition back permanently. There's also a plan to make better use of the canal front area with a bike trail and walking paths. Father Vian's waterfront makeover proposal suits 44-year-old Nga. The social worker expressed mixed feelings about her decision to return to the Versailles community.
In the beginning, when I returned, I was very sad and kept asking my husband, did we make the right decision? We have careers where we could get jobs elsewhere easily. Why do we have to settle for less? Why did we return? We know there's a church here and a community, but on the other hand, we don't have anything. If I take my kids out to play, it's 45 minutes to 1 hour drive back to town, and the pace of rebuilding here is barely moving.
The return of local small businesses helped the community get back on its feet. While the majority of fast food and restaurant chains remained shuttered in New Orleans East until December 2006, Vietnamese-owned restaurants and grocery stores reopened their doors much earlier. Several big businesses, however, are up and running, like car dealerships, storage companies, and home repair stores. Still, many local businesses have not reopened, giving several commercial properties a deserted feel. Nga said she's nervous because many of her neighbors have not returned.
Nga thấy giống như là mình chạy ra ngoài cũng không còn thấy ai, là con nít nó lái ra ngoài đường hoặc là cây cỏ nó mọc nó trồng.
Outside, there's no one. There's no greenery, and in front of each house is a trailer. The town is different now. The neighbors gutted their houses, but they didn't move back to live. They put up for sale signs and are putting their houses up for rent. I ask myself, who will be my neighbor, and will I be safe living here alone? What if I had an emergency and the closest hospital is 1 hour away? I have to ask myself those questions.
So I have to ask myself those questions.
Nga's neighbors aren't the only ones to stay away. After Hurricane Katrina, Nga and 10 family members fled to Houston. Only she, her husband, and their children have returned.
My parents now live with my younger sister. My older brother and sister chose to stay in Houston. One sibling is in Baton Rouge and another is in Slidell.
The Vietnamese-American community may have come together since Katrina, but they are also less of an ethnic enclave. A demand for labor has brought an influx of tens of thousands of migrant Latino workers to New Orleans. Vietnamese restaurants and grocery stores have reopened, but their new neighbors include a taqueria and a check cashing office where workers can send money home to their families. And Father Luke says they've even discussed starting a Spanish language mass at Mary Queen of Vietnam Church.
If we are going to be a wider church, it will be a very strong church in New Orleans because we are including other ethnics. But it creates problems also. You see, it will create problems. How are we going to share the church? How going to the pastor going to work harder because, hey, dealing with three ethnic here, you see. So I don't know how it will turn out.
The future may be uncertain, but community members like Father Vian know Versailles will not remain an invisible community. Through the landfill struggle, residents have already grown more vocal, engaged, and aware of the community's growing influence in local politics.
I think it was arising out of anger and arising out of our sense of, unless we do this, our community may not survive. So in a sense, out of desperation, we did whatever was necessary. And so, forever we've talked about register to vote, but always the question is, we're just a few thousand. How would that make a difference? And so, my vote was just one. But now we realize that because the number of returnees are smaller, that because of our number suddenly become much more significant. So yeah, maybe, or if not, if we can't make a difference, then at least they know that we are participating, the government that is.
For Making Contact, I'm Ngoc Nguyen, New Orleans East. That's it for this edition of Making Contact. Special thanks to Dan Turner, Ronald Rucker, and Steve Macer. Our theme music is by the Charlie Hunter Trio. For a CD copy of program number 1707, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736 or go to radioproject.org. Lisa Redman is our executive director, Dorian Taylor communications manager, Philip Babbage mixing engineer, Alexis McCrimmon intern, and I'm senior producer Tina Rubio. Thanks for listening to Making Contact.